Welcome to Navigating Life with Neurodiversity, a podcast about identity, healing, and honest conversations for those who feel deeply, think differently, and live uniquely. My name is Matt, and I'm glad you're here. Today we're going to talk about the neurodivergent relationship with sleep. And I don't mean sleep as in the metaphorized deity that Sleep Token refer to in their albums that I've become so obsessed with. I mean sleep as in what I'm supposed to do every night when I go to bed. Rest doesn't come easy if you're neurodivergent for a number of reasons, and this episode aims to explore why. Sleep is something natural, vital, but it can feel like a constant uphill battle for many neurodivergent people. Whether it's due to autism, ADHD, sensory processing differences, or other neurodevelopmental conditions, sleep disturbances aren't just an inconvenience, they're often a deeply embedded way neurodivergent brains are wired. This episode takes an expansive, honest look at why. Why is it so hard to rest? What's going on under the surface, chemically, psychologically, behaviourally? What are researchers saying, and how do lived experiences shape our understanding? This isn't just about the science, it's about real people, real struggles, and the need for real change. And perhaps most importantly, it's about changing the narrative from blame and frustration to compassion and informed support. So let's start with the basics. Sleep is managed by two big systems: the circadian rhythm, your body clock, and the homeostatic sleep drive. The longer you're awake, the more pressure builds up to sleep. These systems are regulated by neurotransmitters and hormones like serotonin, dopamine, GABA, melatonin, and cortisol. When everything is balanced, you feel sleepy at night and wake naturally in the morning. But this balance is surprisingly delicate. Light exposure, stress levels, activity rhythms, and even food intake can affect how smoothly these systems work. Cortisol, the body's stress hormone, is meant to drop in the evening, allowing melatonin to take over. When that doesn't happen, rest becomes elusive. GABA should calm the brain, like gently applying the brakes after a busy day. But if the nervous system is in overdrive, that braking mechanism fails. In neurodivergent people, these systems are often dysregulated at a baseline level. The usual strategies that work for neurotypical sleepers often fall flat. So let's dive a little deeper into the brain's chemistry. Melatonin dysregulation. In both autism and ADHD, studies show delayed melatonin onset and lower overall melatonin production. This can mean the internal clock is simply set later, which clashes horribly with early schoolwork and work schedules. It's not laziness or resistance to routine, it's biology, plain and simple. Some of my crewmates will know that I flat out refuse to work earlies unless absolutely desperate for the money, because I simply cannot function early in the morning. I don't go to sleep until 2, 3 a.m. So getting up at 5, 6 a.m. for a 7 o'clock start is torturous. You've got dopamine imbalances. So in ADHD, the dopamine pathways are often underactive, particularly in the prefrontal cortex. Dopamine plays a key role in both attention and alertness. Low dopamine during the day can trigger compensatory hyperactivity or stimulation-seeking behavior. And that can extend into the evening and make sleep harder to initiate. Low GABA activity. If you think of GABA as the body's natural tranquilizer, it helps calm neural chatter so the brain can enter a restful state. But in some neurodivergent people, especially those with autism or anxiety, they have less effective GABA pathways, keeping their brains running on high alert well into the night. Orexin overactivity. Orexin keeps us awake and alert. It's essential during the day, but it's problematic if it stays high in the evening. Some research links chronic stress, overstimulation, or trauma with elevated orexin levels, particularly in people with PTSD or anxiety-based neurodivergence. Now let's talk about what's going on mentally. Many neurodivergent individuals experience heightened internal activity at bedtime. It's when the mask comes off, when the sensory input of the day finally quietens down, that the brain begins sorting, processing, analyzing, and revisiting everything that's happened. It's not unusual for a neurodivergent person to lie in bed replaying conversations, worrying about tomorrow's challenges, or mentally troubleshooting every possible future scenario. If you've ever found yourself wondering why I seem to have an answer for everything, this is why. I've already had the conversation in my head, every different version of it, from every different angle, and I've already planned an answer for just about every response. This is cognitive hyperarousal. It's not just having a busy mind, it's having a brain that refuses to clock off, and it's often reinforced by past experiences of sleep failure, which can create anticipatory anxiety around bedtime itself. Over time, the bedroom becomes associated not with rest, but with stress, frustration, and internal noise. And then there's a sensory layer. Neurodivergent people often process stimuli differently, not necessarily more or less intensely, just differently. That buzzing light from the hallway, the itchy blanket texture, the distant dog barking, these aren't minor distractions, they're disruptions that jar the nervous system and trigger physiological arousal responses. Executive dysfunction also plays a key role. Creating a sleep routine, preparing for bed, organizing your environment, all these small steps require planning, task switching, and motivation. And when executive function is impaired, even starting the wind down process can feel like trying to climb Everest in slippers. At this midpoint, I hope it's become very clear that I put an awful lot of time and research into some of these posts. If you or someone you may know may benefit from the insights shared within this episode, please like, subscribe, share it around. Modern life doesn't help much either. Our environments are increasingly overstimulating and misaligned with our biological sleep patterns. Digital devices are both a blessing and a curse. For many neurodivergent people, screens offer comfort, escape, and an outlet for our hyperfocus. But the blue light from those screens suppresses melatonin, and the stimulating content, videos, games, social media, it keeps your brain active well past bedtime. Even a slight disruption in routine can throw off a circadian rhythm. For people who need structure to function, an unexpected change in evening plans can derail an entire night's sleep. Hyperfocus isn't just staying up late, it's being so deeply immersed that time becomes irrelevant. Neurodivergent often miss the wave of natural tiredness because their attention is hijacked by a task, an interest, or a thought spiral. Once that wave is missed, sleep becomes significantly harder to achieve. For example, I bought the Lego Ferrari SP3 and decided I would start building the engine one night before I went to bed. Made a mistake, had to dismantle the engine, and then I just thought, I'll get back to where I was and then I'll go to bed. Before I knew it, I was halfway through the car and it was light again, and I hadn't slept all night. I hadn't eaten, I hadn't drunk, because I've been so focused in what I was building. We also need to talk about masking. Many neurodivergent individuals spend their days suppressing their stimming behaviors, managing social scripts, and navigating environments not designed for them. This daily cognitive load often leads to what's known as autistic or ADHD burnout, something we spoke about in an earlier episode. It's a state of emotional and physical exhaustion. Ironically, even in this state, sleep doesn't come easy because the nervous system remains overstimulated long after the external world goes quiet. To have a look at how this can manifest in different conditions, we use the term neurodivergence as a broad umbrella. Different conditions present with distinct yet sometimes overlapping sleep challenges. Understanding these nuances helps us move away from oversimplified assumptions and towards a more person-centered approach. Individuals on the spectrum frequently report sleep onset delay or a difficulty in falling asleep. Fragmented sleep with frequent night wakings, shorter overall sleep duration, and lower REM sleep quality. In some cases, there's a complete reversal of typical circadian patterns, being most alert at night and groggy during the day. social and sensory overstimulation, rigid thinking patterns, or anxiety about change can heighten arousal before bedtime. What's more, research suggests that these sleep problems often begin in early childhood and can persist into adulthood if not adequately supported. People with ADHD often experience a delayed sleep phase, where the brain naturally winds down much later than typical. Many describe it as a second wind, hitting at 10 or 11 p.m., just when they should be getting sleepy. Insomnia, restless legs, or parasomnias like sleepwalking, and irregular sleep-wake cycles are common. ADHD can bring difficulties in waking up, grogginess, irritability, or even a sleep inertia where it takes hours to feel fully alert. Not a standalone diagnosis in all healthcare systems, many neurodivergent people exhibit sensory processing differences, and these can make bedtime a battlefield. A scratchy bedsheet, a flickering light, or a faint sound can all trigger intense distress or dysregulation. Sleep becomes something the body resists rather than welcomes. To touch on something I don't think I've discussed before, like tic disorders and things like Tourette's syndrome, nighttime tics can disrupt sleep architecture, particularly deep or slow wave and REM stages. Even if the person isn't consciously aware of those tics at night, they can still result in unrefreshing sleep and daytime fatigue. There's often a comorbid component of anxiety or OCD that further compounds restlessness. Each condition carries a unique sleep profile, and often people live with more than one of these diagnoses simultaneously, and they overlap and can make challenges even more complex and deeply rooted. We can't separate sleep from mental health, they're too deeply entangled. For neurodivergent individuals who already face higher rates of anxiety, depression, PTSD, and emotional dysregulation, poor sleep can both trigger and intensify these states. Heightened threat perception can keep the nervous system on high alert long after danger has passed. Even low-grade background anxiety can lead to tossing, turning, and fragmented sleep. People often describe their bodies feeling tired, but their minds being wide awake. It's a frustrating and exhausting mismatch. While many associate depression with oversleeping, it is just as often linked with early waking, light sleep, and difficulty getting back to sleep once disturbed. Sleep becomes non-restorative. You might clock 8 hours in bed, but still feel hollowed out by morning. People with a history of trauma, especially complex trauma or developmental trauma, often struggle to feel safe enough to fully let go into sleep. Bedroom itself might feel unsafe, or the body remains on edge even when logic says all is well. Nightmares and night terrors are also common and can re-traumatize an individual in their own bed. What's important to understand is that sleep isn't just a wellness issue, it's a survival need. And when mental health is already under strain, even mild sleep disruptions can become disproportionately harmful. This isn't just about being a bit tired, it's about how poorly regulated sleep chips away at emotional resilience, impulse control, executive function, and general well-being. Thankfully, sleep support is evolving. The one-size-fits-all model is beginning to be replaced with more adaptive and neurodiverse affirming interventions. CBT for insomnia is the gold standard in sleep treatment, but it is increasingly being adapted for neurodivergent minds. Flexibility, sensory considerations, and visual structure are often added to make it more accessible. Melatonin supplementation, especially in children with ASD, can support better circadian alignment. Magnesium, L-theanine, and calming herbal preparations are sometimes used under supervision, although more research is needed in this area. In some cases, medications like clonidine, guanfacine, or even low-dose sedating antihistamines are prescribed. The goal isn't to sedate, but it's to support regulation. Still, long-term safety and individual differences must be carefully weighed. Weighted blankets, blackout curtains, ambient white noise, soft lighting, body pillows, These aren't gimmicks, they can radically shift someone's experience of bedtime from one of threat to one of safety and containment. There is a rising popularity in neurodivergent-informed coaching approaches, built around not shaming or enforcing rigid rules, but guiding personalized experimentation with what works. Sometimes that means embracing an atypical schedule, recognizing natural chronotypes, and working with the individual rather than against them. So what are the experts saying? There is a growing consensus among sleep researchers and neurodevelopmental specialists that we need to stop treating sleep issues as behavior problems. Dr. Beth Mallow from Vanderbilt University has been at the forefront of research on autism and sleep, emphasizing the need for integrative care. Whereas Dr. Craig Canapari from Yale Pediatric Sleep Center similarly argues for multidisciplinary approaches that blend psychology, neurology, and environmental strategies. Leading organizations such as the British Sleep Society, the Autism Research Center at Cambridge, and the ADHD Foundation are pushing for more inclusive policies and research funding to better support these unique sleep needs. Importantly, many experts now acknowledge the gap between what's researched in labs and what's lived in real bedrooms every night. Bridging that gap is the key. So where do we go from here? The way forward requires a shift in both mindset and systems. Sleep support must be individualized, flexible, trauma-informed, and rooted in dignity. It means listening to neurodivergent voices, not just as case studies, but as experts in their own experience. We need greater accessibility to sensory-friendly sleep environments. Schools and workplaces should start to recognize natural circadian diversity. We need better training for clinicians on neurodivergent-informed sleep support. And we need more long-term studies on sleep interventions in real-world settings. Sleep isn't a luxury, it is a baseline need. We want neurodivergent people to thrive, we have to stop expecting them to conform to neurotypical frameworks. Neurodivergent sleep challenges are not just quirks or bad habits, they're multifactorial, valid, and worthy of respect. The more we understand about the interplay between brain chemistry, sensory processing, cognitive load, and emotional safety, the better we can respond with compassion and effective support. Let's stop trying to fix people to fit a rigid model of sleep and instead build models that flex to support real, diverse human needs. If you'd like some recommendations for further reading and resources on the subjects discussed today, a list will be attached in the comments section. Thanks for listening to Navigating Life with Neurodiversity. If this episode resonated, follow on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from. Share it with someone you care about, or leave a review. It all helps more than you know. Until next time, be kind to yourselves.